for U.S. Senate in Kentucky and run for the presidency. And the same kind of thing happened with LBJ, Lyndon Johnson. They changed the law, did something so he could back in the day in the 60s, in the 64 campaign, I guess it was. And it was all about changing the law in that state, in Texas. And they're doing the same kind of something in Kentucky. James, help me out. What do you know about what's going on there?
Well, I'm not based. I just know what I've seen in some of the papers is that they're. I assume it's Rand Paul's folks who are pushing to get a special law in Kentucky, like what Johnson had, as you mentioned, in 1960 down in Texas. So that in case he runs for the president and doesn't win, he can still run for the Senate. Which, I mean, this is how politicians stack elections. So it's nothing really sinister about it. It might seem a bit tawdry. But this is how the game is played. And flip side is, on lots of issues, there's nobody better in the Senate than Rand Paul. So, it'd be fine if he stays there and if he doesn't make the presidency.
Well, the power, a lot of people, they don't emphasize this or take as much value in it as I do, is the philosophy, the purity of the philosophy, the infectious nature of that. For generation next, of understanding whether you agree with someone's position or not. You have people from the left and the right supporting Dr. Paul, certainly the youth, because he was consistent in the principle that was applied to everything. You know, abortion, foreign policy, Social Security. I mean, there is at least a common thread, whether you agreed with him or not, that he could rationalize and use philosophy to justify, you know, pretty much most of the time, if not all the time. But Rand is, they're playing games. You know, it's politics. And that was what I think Generation Next was wanting to get away from more than anything else. And from Dr. Paul, Ron Paul's encouragement, they got involved in Republican Party. And they, you know, saw just how bad it was on the inside. They got to see the sausage being made. And I get the impression that Rand thinks that he can play the game. You know, Dad just wasn't as good at it as I. He didn't see. He's all dogmatic and wouldn't compromise and I work with. And right after he gets the nomination in Kentucky, first thing he does is run to New York to meet with Bill Kristol. And I'm like, well, I'm done already. You know, so it got any better? So how do you think his race is going to inspire the next generation? I mean, is there something there, some issue, something that inspires them like his father did, or is it just, you know, next?
Well, that's a great question. I don't have a good answer. It's going to be in part depending on how the other GOP candidates play their cards. But I think back to late 2007 when Ron Paul was in a debate maybe in South Carolina or something like that, and all the other candidates were just utterly warmongering and saber-rattling, and Ron Paul spoke out for peace, and the other candidates and probably the host mocked him, but that was a defining moment for his establishing himself with the American people as a real alternative. And I don't know if Rand Paul is going to be able to make that kind of opportunity or define himself that way. I'm not sure if he wants to define himself that
right.
way.
Right, if he wants but, to, what issue would he use?
I don't know, but I mean, it's interesting. Looking back, September 2013, Rand Paul was one of the most outspoken people in Washington and certainly the most outspoken GOP guy against going to war against Syria. I mean, he was great on that issue. He said the right things. He was thoughtful. He seemed reasonable. Since then, it seemed like he's had a bit of a relapse on these issues, and he's doesn't have the clarity or solid footing or the clear thinking that he had. Or maybe he's just, you know, holding his finger up in the winds. But he was great on Syria and helped rally the American people and the public and the media to recognize the idiocy of the Obama push to go to war against the Assad regime at that point.
Well, now we have Jihadi John, or whatever the heck it is, I don't care. You know, this ISIS thing, and they find out who he is, and they find out, you know, what's your comment on that? Is that more, you know, programming? What's going on?
Well, it's just it's interesting to see how a lot of interventionists are trying to claim that the existence of ISIS proves that we never should have left Iraq, when what it really proves is we never should have gone in there in 2003, because this is the source of ISIS. There is so much chaos and so much hatred unleashed, and this is largely George W.'s fault. It's also Obama's fault, because a major reason that ISIS came came to be was because of the horrendous persecution of the Sunni Muslims, which was done by the U.S.-backed Shiite government, backed by Bush, backed by David Petraeus, backed by Obama. It was obvious that the Shiites were doing horrendous killings and torture of the Sunnis, but the U.S. government kept financing them, kept arming them, and now there's practically a civil war there with a bunch of nutcases with video cameras.
And behind that was what? Just to get the oil? To get China out? To flex it because we can? I mean, I'm not really sure what the Libya thing was. We don't like Gaddafi? I mean, I didn't understand. And what's resulted is, I don't know. I mean, is there some benefit to anybody? What was the purpose? What was the result of this Libya invasion?
Well, it was never justified. I mean, there was no reason for the U.S. to intervene. It was, you know, the U.S. got dragged in there after the French and the British muddled in there and tried to solve the problem. And, naturally,
what problem? What? How is it a problem of somebody in New Jersey? I mean, I don't understand what the problem was.
Well, I mean, there was conflict there. There was, it was a bad dictator who had served the U.S. interests for a long time and served Western interests in the war on terror. But there was a conflict there, and Hillary and Rice and Powers were just, you know, you had the it was a team of three Lady Macbeths, and they were calling for blood, and they got it, and they were so proud when the government there was finally toppled. It was one of their greatest achievements in life. And yet, the same folks are trying to pretend that they have no responsibility for the horrendous chaos that has predictably been followed there.
And this ISIS thing, they're friends of ours or not? We need to arm the ISIS guys in Syria and not anywhere else and kill them somewhere and doing in the Durka Jihad. Oh, I tell you this. There's a gentleman, you may have seen a lot of his videos. It's called Mox News. He had 65,000 videos over the years that he's had up. He put up Panetta, I think, Leon Panetta is ex-CIA and Secretary of Defense. I got the right guy, right? I'm proud that I don't know. But he's up there on the BBC going, oh, yeah, man, Durka Jihad, we got Muslim the Crusades and get the grandchildren ready for a multi-generational war. He puts that up. Boom, Google and YouTube, and you're canceled and done and get them all off. And I'm going, wow. So this ISIS thing, this is like a forever war that they're promoting. And I'm wondering, is there anything that they just manufacturing? Because they need to, they will. But, you know, what do you think's going on? What we got to look forward to?
Well, I mean, it's certainly a nasty, evil bunch, as far as I can tell, these ISIS folks, but it's not our problem. This is, as you said, it's not in New Jersey, and this is something which the Arabs over there in that neck of the woods need to stomp out. It would help if most of the governments there were not such utter dictators and making people hate them with so much violence, but it doesn't make any sense to think that stomping out ISIS is going to solve the problems in that part of the world. And the U.S. government is blamable because it has done so much to feed the Syrian civil war, from which ISIS, which did so much to help ISIS arise. French and the British are even more culpable, but that's typical.
Well, is there a difference between everybody anymore? You know, I mean, it's like they, them, those won't leave us alone just has, you know, different franchises or something. You know, there's one, you know, gang with a flag, you know, which flag, and then underneath that flag is a bunch of flags, like a flow chart of we rule the world. And I'm wondering where it comes from.
Well, that's a perfect question for the U.S. Syrian intervention, because we've tried to be on several different sides, and it's been even more absurd than usual for U.S. foreign policy.
So much more. We're just going to have a conversation as long until James has got to go. Give me a couple more minutes here at the end of the show. And I just want to go to the archive because there's a bunch of stuff that I, you know, just breaks, you know, are very annoying sometimes. But what we're going to do is I just, you know, just talking with James makes me feel better. And at least I feel more informed and I get a view of what's going on in the Beltway because he's there. Oh, I don't know why, but we're glad to have him on our side.
Since time began.
There we go. Now we can just talk. This is we're beginning of 2015. It's going to go through this year, and it's probably not going to be until August is, you know, like the local city Phoenix race will be done in August. Then it hits Labor Day. Then the 2016 election cycle for president kind of gets going. It'll be this fall. When that goes, it'll kind of, you know, they'll the positioning, and they go through the holidays, and then, you know, it's January, and now it's in earnest. Here we go. And but there's jockeying and positioning and money being raised and people and stuff. I've been through this cycle so many times that you can see it's they create their own reality. They're trying to, and I'm wondering what it is that you're seeing. I mean, is it war? It's like wag the dog. Well, you have to have a war. You're kidding, right? You know, no, we just need the appearance of a war. We need a pageant, a song. I mean, you know, that kind of crap. And these guys are going to, you know, BS us into mushroom clouds. And if that's what it takes, that's what they'll get.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, I comment on that. I just want to make sure when it does happen, we don't go into panic mode. They're going to say we are. You know, they're going to give every indication that everybody's freaking out. They'll show every, you know, person, three people on the street with a sign counting guns or something. But I just want to suppress, you know, this urge to just, you know, go out and be afraid and just, you know, offer solution, just, you know, peace. I think that's the most powerful weapon. Like this one was love, you know, the one before the love illusion. I don't know if it's a peace illusion or something we can come up with. I mean, what do you think? How's this going to play out?
I don't know. I mean, I've since 2002, I've seen the warring and the warmongering as the biggest short-term peril to freedom. Because if you look back, Bush sees so much extra power thanks to the Iraq War, and it had such a profound influence on making so many Americans intolerant of any criticism of the president or the federal government. And we're seeing that, same mindset now. I mean, there was a comment by a radio show host on WorldNet Daily, or maybe not WorldNet Daily, maybe some other place, who had she said that the members of the Black Caucus who didn't go to who boycotted the speech by the Israeli Prime Minister should be taken out and hanged for treason. And I'm thinking, well, treason to who? But there is this mindset once the war starts, and it's something that you experienced in 2003 and 2004, and I experienced it, just a complete visceral hatred. And which will happen again with the next time, if in case the government can drag us into another real war, as opposed to just kind of bombing and killing people that we don't like this week.
Well, you know, I saw, it's hard to, we put a lot of stuff. I just send links to staff to put up, and we have a lot of contributors, and I kind of look at the headline. I read some things I think of interest. You know, I'm more interested in technology and how we're going to, you know, solutions to free. Therefore you need this app. Well, they're going to invade and do it. Well, that sounds like another app. So, you know,
good.
So I keep myself, you know, more in positive thinking, but I do have, you know, my seventh grandchild on the way. So I'm going,
that's great. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm very encouraged by a lot. I'm just trying to keep them insulated from the pain and the hunger and the cold and the heat. Just keep them, you know, a positive environment, a love environment around them. So hopefully we trend back out of this by the time they start to become of age. And I'm going, so if I can do that before I die, be a part of that, I'm like, I win. That's my goal.
That's right.
So there's this, the idea that all the stuff that they do, they're going to do. They do anyway. And we find this, you know, the Snowden stuff they were doing. We all suspected this. Anyway, hell, in your books, I mean, you knew this stuff was going on. But the thing is that you go, they needed it to be legal. They needed to be able to make it part of the process. Or they just have extra legal stuff to where they're not even in the system. You're just renditioned and you're Chicago off in some black site in Chicago. I mean, this is Rahm Emanuel kind of stuff. And then they go bankrupt and they're just print more money. I mean, it's just all this stuff. And I'm wondering, you know, what they're going to do now to try and make the things that they're really overstepping now legal. What do they have left to make legal? Just in nuclear invasion? I mean, you know, I'm wondering, is there anything left on their plate they don't think they have?
Well, there's another question here, and that goes to the heart of it, is that the government's this administration and the previous one just kind of don't really care if their policies are legal as long as they can find a way to keep them in place. We saw that in the with George W. and the torture stuff. We see it now with Obama and the actual wording of the Affordable Care Act, which was argued in the Supreme Court this morning, and they're trying to pretend like, well, okay, so the program isn't what the law said it had to be, but still it's helping people, so therefore it's legal. Folks just seem to have completely forgotten that the if government is not under the law, then it's a dictatorship.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's that level of being so utterly naive is just like, it's just kind of, you really don't know what to do with that, because if you have to start by explaining to people, well, no, it's important for the government to be on a leash and be under the law. It's like, good Lord, if they're that clueless, are they corrigible? It's a question of triage.
Well, limited government. I mean, there's a lot of argument. Well, I'm for a small government, limited government, a little bit of government, a little baby government.